Welcome to For the Long Run, the podcast exploring the why behind what keeps runners running long, strong, and motivated. I'm your host, Jonathan Levitt. Through personal and professional connections in the running world, I have the privilege of getting to know some amazing athletes. I've always been fascinated by the psychological aspect of running, and this podcast is aimed at exploring this and much more. I hope you enjoy. This episode is sponsored by Addaday. I've been loving their BioZoom, a portable myofascial release device, essentially a massage therapy gun. In these times when I'm not able to see my chiropractor for ART or other manual therapies, the BioZoom definitely hits the spot, pun intended, of course. BioZoom is designed to help with recovery and can target specific areas of the body in different ways with one of the five attachments designed for tissue-specific treatments. Quieter than the other therapy guns out there, I love using mine while sitting on the couch relaxing, or honestly, even while on a Zoom call. You can get your own at Addaday.com and use the code FTLR15, that's 15, to save 15%. Welcome back. Today I have Camila Jornet joining the podcast. Camila, thanks so much for jumping on to chat.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. So first question, as you may have heard on the podcast that you listen to, who is Camila?
I would say at my core, I'm an observer. I think I've always been a heavy people watcher, maybe because I'm an only child and was constantly surrounded by adults instead of kids my age a lot of times. But that kind of lends itself to my career as a marketer. That lends myself to how I show up for my friends. Even on runs, I really enjoy observing what's around me, whether it's a new city or a new landscape. So I'd kind of start there. I really am just interested in kind of blending in almost sometimes as like a bystander and just kind of seeing what the world has to offer.
Are you a big podcast listener?
I wouldn't say I'm the biggest podcast listener, but I listen to a lot of podcasts. Like I'm the person where if I'm listening to a podcast and someone else is in the car and they ask a question, I'm like, hold on, let me pause. Like, yeah. I'm totally encapsulated by the words people are sharing. And I especially love podcasts because it feels like I'm sitting in the room with people that I'll probably never meet. So I guess maybe I am a big fan of podcasts.
Yeah, the reason I ask is it's an opportunity to sort of be a fly on the wall, and mm-hmm. I think that's what I like about it too. So where does the observer or how does that play into your day-to-day life?
I'd say right now it's really interesting because we're all quarantined, so I have less ways to observe people in person, and for better or worse, my partner, he would probably say for worse. That means I spend a lot of time on social media or in the comment section of articles I've read, just trying to understand how others are dealing with what's going on right now. I'm really fascinated by how people come to a point where they feel they want to voice their opinion on different things or how they present themselves into new groups. So I'm the person that's looking at someone on a Zoom call and like seeing what books are on the bookshelf behind them or listening to the children chit-chatting in the background and thinking, wow, I wonder what it's like to be parenting right now. And working remote. Like, those are the thoughts I have when, yes, I'm fully tapped into a meeting. But it's very interesting seeing how intimately you're getting to know these people that you saw every day at work, and now you're getting to know bits of their home and their work-life balance too. So that's what I've been observing lately.
Yeah, I saw a tweet the other day that said, let's stop calling it working from home and instead call it living at work.
Yes, I saw that too. Which is kind of sad.
Yeah, it is. And it, you know, you sort of have to focus on the boundaries and mm-hmm. ways to separate work from like normal life. And I've had a lot of conversations with some of my friends about this, and one of them specifically had this realization. He works for an accounting company and he's like, I could put in 100% effort every day for the rest of my life and the company doesn't care. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I got to do what's right for me. I got to, you know, think of me first.
Yep.
And do what I need to do. And I think that's, it's that realization of like, put your own mask on first before helping those around you. And I love mm-hmm. to travel. So I get that, or previously I would get that reminder often. And yep. now maybe it's a little more literal in that we should be wearing masks. but would you say that you agree and sort of feel that as well?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I like to think of myself as someone who works really hard and strives for their best in all aspects of mm-hmm. my life, but I've never considered myself a perfectionist. And I honestly think the reason that, despite the fact that I do want to like nail a project or nail a workout or whatever it is, I also give myself a lot of grace, for better or worse. I'm okay accepting that maybe there's something else going on that takes precedent and that my health is more important than that project. Or it's okay if I just close my computer at 5, even if I could spend another half hour banging something out. And I'm really happy that I've built those boundaries, probably now more than ever. So.
Definitely. So I came across your name a couple of weeks ago and I wish I could remember who had posted about you, but essentially it was at the start of the Black Lives Matter movement in, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And mm-hmm. it was a post that said, follow these athletes, amplify their voices. They are awesome. And I started poking around, and my Instagram feed is, you know, 95% white, and even this podcast is the same way. And so I started looking at like, what can I do as a podcast host and as a person with, you know, I don't have 100,000 followers, but like, mm-hmm. How do I, as a white person, you know, do something different? Like, that's the bare minimum, you mm-hmm. know, not keeping status quo. That's wrong. You must do something. So I came across your name in that way, and I've absolutely loved following you on Instagram. Your analogies from running applied to life, or life applied to running. I haven't seen anything better. And one of the, I'll share a couple of the quotes. Today I marched, but who said you need an organized protest to show up for what you believe in? Are you only a runner come race day? This movement is about consistency, and we barely started to build our base. This movement is about getting uncomfortable, so I'm carrying the sign all day. I'm sticking to my window tomorrow, and I'll hold it proudly until the message is clear. Why should the work stop when the protest does? This is just the beginning. What was that post for you? Where did it come from? What's the significance of the connection to running? And specifically, are you only a runner come race day?
Yeah, I mean, I've thought a lot about how I use my voice and who's in my network, and maybe a bit oddly, but quite similar to you, my network is a lot of white runners. Right. I do a sport where I was the only Black girl on my college cross country team. I work in the outdoor industry where there are not a lot of Black women, and I run. And I've always compared my life to running in some way, shape, or form. Running has helped me find who I am. It's given me confidence. It's given me my closest friends and relationships. And that post in particular, I wasn't sure that I wanted to go march. I think it's really devastating that I have to stand in the street and tell strangers that my life matters. That's not something that I think anyone really wants to do, despite how necessary it is right now. And I started thinking to myself about the work that is ahead of us as I started reading a lot of posts of almost people are starting to feel a sense of fatigue right now from just absorbing all of this information and realizing how much work there is to do. And I kind of had a flashback to when I started running and how all of a sudden you show up to your first day of practice and you don't really know where to start. Your coach throws a lot of terminology at you and tells you it doesn't really matter for you, just run. You'll figure out what tempo and fartlek and all these things mean later. So you just run and it's hard and every day is uncomfortable. And it's uncomfortable for a while, but eventually you kind of start to find your footing. And then the races are the fun things. And strangely here, the protests aren't necessarily the fun things, but they're when, similar to when you're in a race, it's the moment when you're surrounded by people that are collectively coming together for a reason, for something bigger than all the individual efforts that you're doing on your own. And going to that protest in Ventura was something really powerful for me. And it was something I was scared and uncomfortable to do, even as a Black woman. Ventura is not the most diverse city. I wasn't sure what it was going to look like, but when you show up to the start line of a race, you don't always know exactly what the course is going to look like, no matter how many times you've looked at the course profile or the map. You don't know exactly who's going to be on that start line, but you do know you're surrounded by people who want to challenge themselves. And so it just kind of seemed like a natural link to me, and it felt like an opportunity for me to reach my network that might be struggling with how often do you show up, or what are the right things to do, or what actions matter. You don't have to have a protest to have an impact in this movement. You don't have to follow the exact same path as everyone else, but you do need to put in the continuous work. So that's kind of where I see the link.
I love that. And I think that it's one of those, it's the same analogy of like, the work is done in private often, mm-hmm. and the outcome is done in public, just like how training works, or just like mm-hmm. how, you know, there's been a lot of, I don't want to call it shaming, but shaming of people, quote unquote, not doing enough. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of blessing and the curse of social media. Like, if it's not on social media, did it really happen? And I think there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that we should be working on and that we are working on that mm-hmm. it shouldn't be on social media. Like the conversations we're having at the companies we work for, or that are happening behind closed doors in the outdoor industry about like, how do we address this problem? Like that shouldn't be on social media, but the outcome needs to be. And that's the next step. So I had a conversation, I've had a lot of conversations, I guess, with coworkers on this. I also work for a company in the outdoor space and focus on health and nutrition. Mm-hmm. And we've done a lot of introspection around like how are we going to be a part of the solution versus being a part of, you know, how it's always been. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about your experience in the outdoor space as well. And are you seeing more of these conversations? And I know you talked at length on the Morning Shakeout, Mario Fraioli's podcast about this as well. And I would encourage people to listen to that episode as well. It was very well done. Mario leads an incredible conversation as always. And yeah, so I'm curious, like, are you seeing a difference in the outdoor space, in the conversations that you're a part of?
Yeah, I mean, I think these conversations are happening, which is a big step in the right direction. I don't think that they weren't happening before. I think we've known for a long time that the outdoor industry in particular can do a lot more. I think that this was just kind of, my partner's kind of been relating a lot of what's going on to having like a toothache, where you have something that's kind of nagging you and you don't really want to go to the dentist for it, but it's bothering you. And then by the time you finally go, they're like, oh, well, this whole tooth is trash. Like, it's gone. Like, you waited way too long. And right now, it's like we're sick and we're starting to realize that it's not a pain that you can just ignore anymore. It's not going to go away. So we have to take action towards repairing it. But I think what I've noticed the most is that we have to do more than just admit that there's a problem. And honestly, what comes to mind for me when I think about what it's going to take to make change is not a public statement on Instagram. It's not a black square on your feed. It's not even just posting some photos of people of color. It's making this a part of your job like everything else is a part of your job. If you work in marketing, then you should always be thinking like, okay, how does this look? How are our images looking? What are the stories that we're telling? How can we highlight different viewpoints? If you work in HR, you should not just say you're open to diverse people working at your company, but you should seek them out. You should realize where you're doing your recruiting, how you can connect with them, what will make your company feel more accepting to people that haven't been seen in that space. If you work in any facet of an outdoor company, there's something that can be done just to make people feel included. And that's done on a human level. Like, that doesn't have to be a brand initiative that you publicize on Instagram. The same way when you're running, you do a lot of work on your own. Like, you don't share every single step you take as a huge milestone. It's really the cumulative efforts that then come together. And all of a sudden, you're just authentically doing the work, and it's second nature, just like any other part of your job is.
Yeah, and I think your background in marketing is particularly interesting here, right? The principle of marketing is impressions leading to some sort of different action. And I was talking with a friend who I had on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he is mixed race. And he said, it's very weird for me to go to a trail race and be the only person that looks like me. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this, and essentially what we came to with, you know, it's true in marketing, it's true in, you essentially need to see yourself as mm-hmm. a part of this community. I'm talking about how to buy a product or how to, you know, join a community or whatnot. And I imagine that's difficult. So why did you get into running?
Honestly, I guess I always wanted to run. I think it's the only sport mm-hmm. that I asked my mom to sign me up for. And for whatever reason, it just never really happened until I moved back to California in eighth grade. And I had made one friend before eighth grade ended who told me to check a box that cross country was the same as track, except a little longer, which wasn't at all true. But that checkbox really changed the course of my life. I think I've just always liked being on the move. And even when I played soccer for a couple of years, my favorite part was running up and down the field and like seeing, oh, what do the defenders do down here? Oh, that's interesting. Okay. What do the people that are trying to make the goals do up here? Oh, okay. That's cool. Like, I'm just going to kind of run up and down the field and kick the ball if it comes towards me, but don't count on me to score a goal or do anything impressive on the field. I like the social aspect of running a lot. I like the way it brought people together. Like, if you've ever been on the bus ride home with a bunch of dorky cross-country kids, like, it's a mess, but it's awesome. Like, it's just everyone kind of finds their click, but everyone's a family. And I think that's what has kept me in running so long, is that whatever group of runners I find myself in, it feels like a family. And then you bump into each other all over the place forever. Like, I see teammates from high school at meets now in my late 20s, or I see kids I coached that are now graduating from college. And like, that's so special. Running's really great for that reason.
Definitely. One of the things that I found really interesting on that you shared on Mario's podcast was your coach, your cross country coach took a particular interest in which distance you were running. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's a bit ironic when I think about it, because the high school I went to, I had one coach for cross country and I had one coach for track. My cross country coach was actually the girls' sprint coach for track, but he was the one who told me I was not supposed to be a sprinter. So in my head, in retrospect, I find it interesting that the coach that brought me into the sport of running in general turned down an opportunity to continue coaching me in the spring, and instead pushed me towards the other coach who coached the boys' cross-country program and then all of us for distance track. And I don't know if I would have ended up gravitating as much as I did towards distance track events if he had not told me quite sternly that I was not a 100-meter runner. Because all I knew of track was the sprints. Like, I loved to watch the Olympics or track meets whenever they were on TV. I'd gone to some with my family. And I mean, even after being in the sport, most people don't stick around for the 10,000. And I never ran the 10,000. But I grew to appreciate it. Like, I grew to appreciate the 2 mile in high school. It wasn't my favorite event, but distance track isn't highlighted in the same way that the sprints are, especially as a African-American track athlete. So yeah, it was interesting being kept in the distance group, because all of a sudden track comes and that seems to be when most of the Black athletes show up to the sport. And all of a sudden there's all these kids that look like me, but the only time I ever get to run with them is when I'm jumping on the 4x4 or some sort of sprint medley relay. So yeah.
Did you acknowledge that at the time?
I don't know that I ever verbalized it or that it was a strong thought. I almost feel like because I felt I was so different, I really didn't even push myself to excel in the 400 or the 4x4. I remember being really upset whenever I got pulled into it, despite having strength in the 800 and in the mile and always having a kick at the end of my races. I hated running the 400. And I would always tell the coaches, like, I'm not a 400-meter runner. Like, this is not my event. Get me out of here. And they continued to put me in it. And when I started coaching, it was kind of shocking to me that I was running. And in high school, I ran a 213 800, but I never, ever broke 60 in the 400. Like I'd run 62, 63, which wasn't that much faster than what I went out right. for my first lap in the 800. So like there was definitely some sort of block there where I think in retrospect, it was almost like I had to choose. Do I want to be the distance runner that really should be running the 400 and the 800? Or am I actually a distance athlete who excels in cross country and is scoring and also like can run fast on the track a few months out of the year?
So fast forward a few years, what's your favorite distance today?
I'd have to say probably the mile, which is probably the event that I've raced the least, but the event I wish I would have leaned into harder. When I graduated college, I ran in college for 2 years. I didn't run my third year because I graduated a year early, took way too many classes, and just needed a break. So I took about 3 years off running completely, started coaching, started to get back into it, and then had this pipe dream of breaking 5 in the mile. And my PR in the mile at the time from college was 5:19. But I started putting in all this work on the track, and I fell in love with training by myself and waking up and just like me and the clock every time I was out there. And there's something really special about the mile because it's definitely not a sprint, but you have to have those gears. And that's my favorite part of running, is seeing like how many times can you shift your gears to push just a little harder? Like, how are you going to react when someone catches you? And in the mile, you have to react quickly. It's not like when you're in a half or 5K and you think, okay, like there's a hill coming, I'll catch him then, or I have time, I'll just sit in this pack. Like when the move happens, you go. And I just love that about the mile. It's an event that's really special to me.
Yeah, I love the mile as well. I think what makes it interesting, so I've never spent any time focused on distances below it, but what I've loved about the mile is that like if you feel good, like a pretty easy barometer is if you feel good, you're going too slow. Mm-hmm. and I love that. It's like you're teetering on lots of discomfort. It's pretty uncomfortable, but mm-hmm. it's manageable discomfort for 5 minutes or so.
Yep.
Thanks again to Adaday for sponsoring this episode. I love their massage therapy gun called BioZoom, especially in these days when I can't see my chiro for regular body work. BioZoom is designed to help with recovery and can target any specific sore spots with one of the 5 attachments designed for different parts of the body. It's super easy to use right out of the box and has definitely helped with any muscular aches and pains that have popped up over the last few months. Grab yours at addaday.com, like add a day, with code FTLR15 to save 15%. So the mile. What about the have you done any longer, or let's talk about longer racing. Do you have visions of going longer? Is, you know, what's the difference for you between the mile and the half, let's say?
Yeah, I've only raced one half. I had signed up for another, I guess a couple years ago now, and it got canceled due to the fires. I was going to do a half up in Monterey. And instead of doing a half, me and my friend who had traveled up there, I hadn't even gotten a half into my training period in that block. I think my longest run had been maybe 10. And we find out the night before that our race was canceled. And I was like, why don't we do the 17-mile drive loop? And she was like, you want to run 17 miles tomorrow? And I was like, yeah. Like, why not? Like, we're all the way up here, and I know it's a loop, and it's supposed to be a really pretty drive. Why don't we just run it? And that's kind of my approach to anything longer, is like, why not? Let's just try it and see what happens. And for better or worse, sometimes that ends up great. I did a 36K in Montaña de Oro, which is on the coast not far from San Luis Obispo, California. And I loved it, and I smiled, and I walked, and I ate sweet potatoes out of the back of my little hydration pack, and I had chips, and like, it
was
great.
That's the classic trail and ultra experience.
It was just like something really fun and special, and I was still somewhat competitive, but for once I wasn't really like counting the girls in front of me. I'd never been in a race where I didn't care that I was in fourth place the whole time, but this race I was like, it's fine. Like, I don't really need to stand on the podium. I'm enjoying nature. Like, this is beautiful. And then I decided I wanted to do a 49K, and I know some things about ultras because I've spectated a lot of them, and I've worked in the running industry and attended Western States and UTMB. And I was like, if I ever do one, I want it to be in Europe, because trail racing in Europe is like a whole nother level. So I signed up for Zermatt 49K near the Matterhorn in Switzerland. And my partner, who's from Annecy in France, came along with me, and we made a trip out of it. And long story short, I made it to the first peak after about 6,000 feet of climbing. I'm about half a marathon in, and my stomach wanted to kill me. Like, I don't know why. I had never thought, you've never been at altitude like this before. You train at sea level. Why did you not get in any sort of altitude training? And so I walked a bit, and then we hopped on the train, and I DNF'd, and that was my experience of trying to run a 49K that I thought I could just wing my way through. But that's running. Like, I've never not finished a race before, but of all the ones not to finish, probably the one where I wasn't at all prepared and thought I could just wing it, like I did my 17-mile run a few months earlier. Like, that's what happens. But you learn from running. And now I know, like, if I want to do something longer, I can still not be competitive. I can still just be there to enjoy it. It was absolutely gorgeous and breathtaking, and I love the trail community. But there's a bit more work that needs to be put in, the same way I put in the work when I wanted to break 5 in the mile. Like, so that's kind of how I feel about long stuff.
Those mountains are something else, to say the least. So good on you for even, you know, lining up to start. I was hoping to go to UTMB this year. I've been to Western States. The community out there is absolutely phenomenal. And I've seen what UTMB looks like, and it looked, you know, like next level stuff. What was the environment of that 49K?
It was really interesting. I'd say from the beginning, the most interesting thing to me was we showed up, I'm picking up my bib, walking around with my partner, and everyone kept asking him what race he was running. And he wasn't running any race. Like, he was there to cheer for me. Time and time again, whether it was someone that he knew that just happened to be there, or a race volunteer, or another runner, or the people camping next to us, they asked him what race he was running. And when I got out there, there were some women, not a lot of people of color. There could have been another Black woman out there, but I did not see her. And it kind of just felt like I was in these beautiful mountains that everyone who wants to should be able to go see and explore. And clearly I wasn't the most prepared because I didn't finish the race, but I was there.
Yeah, but that happens to everybody.
Like that happens to every, that's part of ultras. Like part of ultras is sometimes your body just says no. And you either push through or you decide to try again later. But it was a bit shocking to me that it was just, if I'm speaking honestly, a bunch of white guys out on this really long adventure. And everyone assumed that clearly I would not be someone that was running that race. So.
Have you had a similar experience at any trail races in the States?
I mean, most of the time I'm the only Black woman, if not maybe one of a handful. I do wonder sometimes, the trail community is super friendly. They're super inviting. They're awesome, awesome people. Like I honestly fell into trail races because I was so enamored by the crowds and the crews at Western States the first time I went. And I was like, I just want to come back to keep watching this.
Observe these people,
to meet these characters and to watch this whole process. Like it's such an infectious atmosphere. And for trail running specifically, I don't think that it's that people don't think they're welcome. I just think that there's not a lot of work being done to introduce people to the sport in general. Like trail running is a niche sector of running, period.
Right.
The kids I coached in high school had no idea what Western States was. They had no idea what trail running was. But we run on trails every week. Like people run on trails, they just don't call it trail running. And people might gasp when you say you did a 36K, but it's also sometimes just like a long hike because you're eating snacks and you can walk and not everyone is racing the entire time. But that doesn't mean everyone's not competitive. Like I loved when I was talking with Tim Tolfson before UTMB, he said something along the lines of like, he walks the majority of climbs at UTMB. Yes, he walks rather quickly. Like he's a beast and that's something that he excels at. But everyone is not out there dropping 430 miles like you see when you watch Breaking 2. It's a different kind of sport. And I just wish that there was more emphasis on the fact that anyone can start running on trails and enjoy the same beauty of nature around you and meet some really awesome people in the process too.
Totally. I think it's, like you said, it is such a niche sport that at least trail running takes like a certain kind of weird, like all of my friends that I know that our trail runners are like just a little weird, myself included. And it's a very welcoming. And once you're there, you know, trail running has a rich background or acceptance of pride and all of these intersectional communities that happen to also be trail runners. So anyone who's listening to this, I would invite you to give it a try. You will be welcomed in on the trails and at trail races. And what's fascinating about that is I had Kara Goucher on the podcast in June after she did her first trail race, and it was the Leadville Marathon. And what she shared will drive that point home. She was, you know, gunning to win and, you know, do really well and show up on the podium and whatnot as an Olympian would strive for. And she got her butt handed to her. Same thing. You know, altitude, Leadville's 10,000 feet. Mm-hmm. All of the variable, and she lives at 5,000 feet. And all of these variables that like that you just don't know about as a road runner. Her stomach, her, you know, the bathroom issues, GI distress and whatnot. And so I think she finished sixth, and she didn't want to go to the award ceremony because she was embarrassed. And she thought people would be like, oh, Kara Goucher, you know, why didn't you win? And what she found at the finish line were a bunch of people that were just excited for her to be there. And like, oh, how was your fueling? And what were the foods you ate out there? And how was your, you know, how did you like the mountains? And I think what's really cool about the trail running in particular, and I think it's more welcoming than the road community, is exactly that. Like, nobody gives a shit about anything besides, mm-hmm. are you having fun?
Yep.
Are you enjoying yourself? Are you not throwing trash on the ground? Like, those are the only three things that matter in the trail world.
Yeah, that's very, very true. It's just, it almost feels like a party of nature loving active people. Like, yeah,
I'd
we happen to be out
perfect,
here
yeah.
running, but like, we're just happy to be here. Even when it's hard and it sucks, like running sometimes does, like, you're just happy to be there.
Definitely. So where do you see your own running in the future?
That's a really good question. It's one I've asked myself a lot during quarantine, especially. I, like many people, was signed up for a race that got canceled. I was supposed to do a half in May. And maybe some people can relate to this, but essentially by second week of quarantine, so end of March, I was like, it's not happening, and I'm not training for it anymore. So I saw a lot of people really lean into training, and for better or worse, I'm really good at leaning out of training. So right now, sure, if I want to jump in on someone's long run or do a couple reps of a workout, that might be something I'm willing to do. But I'm kind of, despite the fact that I've been running for over a decade, it's maybe the first time where I'm not really sure what I want to do next. I don't know if I want to try to join a team for the virtual speed project and see how far we can run in 31 hours. I don't know if I want to do some trail runs and try and do my longest run. I don't know if I want to jump on the track. But what I do know is that the work I've put in over the last 10 years allows me to have options. And that's something I really love about running, because whether I get outside for 10 minutes or an hour or 90 minutes, I always feel better when I come back. So I think right now my main thing is just running enough that I'm happy, which might sound really corny, but some days I feel like running and some days I don't, and that's okay too. So.
Totally. I love that. I think that a lot of people are thinking that if they're not doing an FKT or they're not doing a virtual marathon or they're not doing this or that, like they're regressing or they're not doing enough. I had my coach, David Roche, on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he basically said, whatever you're doing is right, because you're doing what you want to be doing. And by sort of following that as your litmus test, it's like, if you get up and you want to run, go for a run. That's like, that's great. If you get up and you want to, you know, bang out a long run, great, go for it. I don't think we'll ever have, hopefully we'll never have an opportunity like this again, where mm-hmm. there's like so much freedom to not be sharp and not be peaking, that you can, yeah, do whatever you want. Or if you want to take like a month off entirely, that works too.
Definitely.
So is that kind of introspection something you do on a regular basis? Or I know you said you've been thinking a lot about this.
Yeah, I mean, I spend a lot of time thinking about my relationship to running. In college was actually the first time I started going to see a sports therapist to talk about like my relationship with running. And I've seen a therapist off and on since then, and it's awesome. I highly recommend it to anyone who is able. It's really great to be able to have conversations and realize, like, what does running mean to me? And a question I often ask myself is, who am I if not a runner? It's not that I don't see myself being a runner for the rest of my life, but I also think it's important that my running doesn't define me. Coming from being someone who can be ultra competitive, I kind of have to take steps back, almost to the point where right now it would be tremendously hard, if not impossible, for me to hit some of my splits from a year ago. But that's okay, because I also love to cook, and I'm also the new owner of a gravel bike and learning how gears actually work. And I also love to go to the beach and jump in the ocean. And I also love to go to yoga. And I also love to drink beer. Like, all of those things are activities I enjoy. So if I'm not running, I still have all of these other things. So even when I set goals for myself, I try to think of it from both sides. So when I was trying to break 5 in the mile, I thought, well, I'm either going to run more than likely the fastest I've ever run in my life, or I'm going to run the fastest I've ever run in my life and break 5. Like, both of those are great options. Maybe, right. And it ended up the latter. I ran the fastest I ever ran in my life and I broke 5. Like, that's great. But then I have to take a step back, go back to the drawing board and go, okay, now that you broke 5, are you a different person? Does that make you better? Not really. Like, it's something cool. It's a fun fact you can tell people, but yeah.
So did you get to that point before you broke 5 or after you broke 5?
I'd say,
and I'll tell you why I ask in a second.
Yeah. I'd say, as much as I can say all of this, I had those thoughts before I broke 5, but I didn't really remind myself of them while I was trying to break 5.
Right.
So then you end up breaking it and you're like, oh, okay, remind yourself of what you said before you had this goal.
Totally.
Yeah.
So the reason I ask is I spent 4 years trying to break 3 in the marathon, and I ran 3:27 to 3:20 and then 4:01. And then I didn't race for 2 years. And fast forward to May of 2019, I'm standing on the start line of a marathon for the first time in 25 months. And I just didn't care. Mm-hmm. It was like, like I said before, like, it didn't matter to me if I saw 2, 3, or 4. I assigned no value to the actual number, but rather like the process of getting there. Like, I wanted to do something that I had never done before, and it took a mental change to actually achieve it. And then I did it, and I was like, exactly what you said. Like, am I a different person? No. Am I still, you know, do I still have bills to pay? Yes. Do I still have a, you know, a job? Yes. Does my family still love me? Yes. I had Scott Faubel on the podcast, and he talked about the same thing. And I can't remember exactly what he was saying, but he was giving some guidance around, like, will your partner still love you if you don't achieve this thing in this race? Yes. Okay, cool. And the outcome, like, doesn't actually matter. Yeah. But again, it's the process of getting there and the process of getning better and what you learn along the way that is highly impactful. So I'm going to go back and quote another one of your one of your Instagram posts that I thought of on my run today, My run today was 70 minutes over hills. So very specific hill work, or not very specific hill work, just lots of them. And in this post, you said, in running, you learn to crest the hill. As you approach the peak rather than let up, you push harder. I've never been a strong hill runner, yet have always been one to crest the hill. I work to carry my momentum through those last crucial steps, despite my legs screaming of discomfort, but I never ask my legs to stay silent. I ask them to be strong. I've run up thousands of hills and I'm not stopping now. And then you loop the running into this movement needs momentum, not silence. So I think on the running side, this makes tons and tons of sense. Like, to break five, you can't let up at the end. To break three, you can't let up at the end. To do anything worthwhile, you can't let up at the end. You have to push on through. And I think it's just like, again, I just love how these analogies around running apply so much to life. And I think that's like, that's the point of, at least that's the point of running for me, like learning what it is that makes you better and achieve more. And then how do you take that and apply it to the other 23 hours of your day?
Definitely. I mean, with running, one of my favorite things about PRing is not the fact that you have a new time to add to your Strava bio or whatever it may be, but the fact that every time you PR, you're doing something that you've never, ever done before. Right. Like, where else can you do that consistently? And when you take a step back and you realize that, whether it's 1 second or 1 minute, like how special that we have an activity that teaches us that we can always strive to push a little harder, to challenge our bodies, to challenge our minds, probably more than anything. And I think because of that, the link between strength as a runner and strength as a human, just in all facets of our life, is such a strong link. Like, it's so clear.
Yeah. So I read an article a while back, I think it was an Outside magazine, about endurance athletes being better employees for pretty much that exact reason. Like, you follow a process to getting better, you challenge yourself, you get better. You apply that to a professional setting. Your boss asks you to do something that you've never done before. You figure out a way to do it, and then it's easier in the future. So my question, I guess, is, do you think that runners are more equipped to help others facilitate the type of societal changes that we're starting to see?
I really like that question, because I think right now it's interesting to think about who takes on what role as we try to move forward. And I think that runners offer a unique perspective, not because I believe as a group it's up to runners to be the ones that right. are jobs saying, like, yes, I run, so X, Y, and Z needs to be done.
Right.
But I do think as people, we're very used to long timelines and committing to a process for an extended period of time.
And discomfort
in it. Like, you're uncomfortable at the end of a workout, but it's a success. Like, you're uncomfortable at the end of a race, but it's a success. And you know that this race is just part of the series of races that you've signed yourself up for, and you're going to be uncomfortable in all of them. And then maybe you take a break and have a little Christmas holiday, like time off week. And then you jump back in and you force yourself to be uncomfortable again and again and again and again. And I think if that can be understood by more people, that anything in life takes continued effort, most things worth fighting for are uncomfortable, then that's something that people can start to understand a lot more. And we've seen throughout this pandemic, so many people turn to running. Like, I've seen so many family members or friends that never ran before that now are saying, wow, I see improvement from 4 weeks ago when I couldn't run a mile to now I'm, you know, jogging along at this pace and it feels great. And like, I didn't know running could feel great. And if our community is growing, then that means there's more and more people that understand that sustained hard efforts can lead to forward momentum. And that's something that's really strong.
I love that so much. I think that that's like the epitome of what's happening right now. It's the sustained, uncomfortable efforts that need to keep happening. And I think that's why we're seeing athletes, not just running, but athletes in general as advocates, because and taking the role of what intuition might say the government should be doing, or local leaders, or, you know, whatever. No, it's athletes with the platform. It's athletes with the voice. It's athletes who have been told, stay in your lane. Mm-hmm. And they've said, this is my lane. It's everybody's lane. And I think that the athletes in general just get it. You know, you look at the NBA, you look at Major League Baseball, you look at NASCAR even. They understand the long timeline. They understand, as you're saying, the it doesn't happen overnight. And I think that we're uniquely suited to deal with things that take a long time. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, definitely. There's just so much potential. And a lot of people have been athletes at some point in their life. So I hope that people can tap into that and remember how great it felt when you committed to something for the long haul.
Definitely. What's one thing that you wish people knew about you?
I would say one thing I wish people knew about me is that I'm actually, I don't know if this is the right word to say I'm an introvert, because my friends would laugh at that, but I kind of am. I've always been pretty quiet. Even when I started my most recent job, I told my boss, I won't always speak up in every meeting, but when I do speak up, I generally have something I think is important to be shared. Like, I'll listen.
You should listen to me.
I'll observe a lot, but don't think I'm not paying attention. I'll share when I feel I need to share. And I guess that's kind of rolled over into my life in general, is that I share when I feel my words can have impact. And I say that something I hope people know about me, because our voices have power and our words have power, but you also can be very aware of when to use them and when to listen and when to observe and when to learn. And as much as I'm enjoying being on this podcast, as much as I'm enjoying people resharing my posts and my words, I hope people realize I'm just a young woman who decided that I had something that I wanted to share with people. And that that can be anyone, that everyone's voice is loudest within their own network, whatever that means. So you don't always have to sit back and wait for someone who actually says something and you think, oh, well, yeah, they're supposed to speak on that the way you're speaking of politicians or leaders. Like, what is a leader? Anybody can be a leader. I'm sharing my words and I consider myself to be a bit introverted, but it's important. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your words on this podcast today. I've learned a lot, and I hope that this is one of the highest listened episodes, the most listened episodes, because I think this is really the really important stuff. This is the kind of message that more people need to hear. Specifically, the your voice matters, and what you do matters. So thank you for sharing what you've shared, and particularly that there at the end. Where can we find you if we want to follow along with your adventures?
Instagram at Camila Journay. That's where I share most of my words first. And then if they end up other places, great. But that's me.
Awesome. Camila, thanks so much. And hope to see you on a mountain somewhere at some point.
Yes,
soon.
I would love that. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. That's it for today's episode. Like many long runs, it's sad when it has to end. I hope you join in next week on For the Long Run. And in the meantime, happy trails. If you've enjoyed this episode, it would mean a lot to me if you shared it so that others can find it and enjoy it too.